Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Oh, a very good morning to you. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Welcome to the show. We are at the end of October. Can you believe that?
Yes.
Yes, I can.
Yes.
It's cold out.
Oh, boy. I was walking around Seattle last night.
And yeah, dark, rainy, cold, windy. You know, I believe it.
We were walking around in the Seattle Center area, and it just happened to not at that moment be rainy. And with all of the Christmas lights going up, it was so festive and calm. And I thought, oh, okay, if this is what it would do, this would be great if it was every day. You know, but it was just our, you know, 20-minute walk back to the hotel. And it was like, oh, so nice for fall. So, well, welcome. Let me get that phone number out real quick. And then Dr. Mixon, we're going to find out what is on the top of your mind. Here is the number to get through and get into the call queue with your questions.
That's a dangerous question, Lynette.
You know, you're right. I should remember
show,
that. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Here is the number to get through with your calls today. 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. Don't wait till the end of the show. Call now. Get into the call queue, and we will get to your questions. But first, Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat, what should we discuss? What's making news this week?
Well, I can't tell you what's making news because I haven't
in
seen
medical
news.
Yeah,
we don't want to discuss that.
No, politicians
being morons.
That's exactly right.
It's not really new news.
That's not new news. That's the dawn of time.
And, yes.
Yeah, no, the other night my son texted and he goes, it's a Thursday night. It's football night. I go, thank goodness it's football night.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. Who's blowing up who today?
Oh, boy. Yes.
And quite frankly, I'm too busy to give a damn.
Yeah.
So
there's so much work to do. Goodness me. Yeah.
Well, you know, right now, it's pointed out to me that many of the 100+ blogs on the website were written back in 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011.
Which now seems so long ago, right, Jerry?
Yeah. And so I am actually in process right now of going back and rewriting 100 outdated blocks.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
And so, you know, I'm going through them and starting to bring the data up to date and answering the questions from the blogs in more 21st century.
Very interesting.
Yeah, 2020s sort of data. So that's really got me busy. I'm doing anywhere from 2 to 5 a day of those, trying to get them ready to go back up on the website with more up-to-date stuff.
Nice.
One of the things I am seeing a lot about right now is stress.
Mm, okay.
You know, the, quote, dangers of stress.
Mm.
And I recognize stress is dangerous,
mm-hmm.
which is why I tend to give it instead of receive it. But I don't want it. You can have it.
You can have it. Yeah, I know.
But yeah, cortisol.
Yeah.
In short bursts is a lifesaver.
Mm-hmm.
But in chronic administration, whenever we've got something going on that we're just stressing about all the time, our body doesn't know the difference in a real danger and an emotional danger.
Right.
You know, so when you've got anxieties, mm-hmm. what's happening is your body is interpreting whatever situation you're in as a physical danger.
Correct.
And so you're kicking out enormous amounts of cortisol, which is our short-term, they're baby, everything is okay hormone.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Okay. So if you're out in the forest and you know you fall and you break your leg, you will panic for a few moments, and then all the cortisol flood will come in and tell you you're going to find a way to get out of this. Mm. And you'll be convinced you'll find a way to get out of this right up to the moment you die. Mm. So,
unless it's a Hallmark movie, then,
that's
you know.
Right. In which case,
and your old boyfriend comes and rescues yes. you, yes.
But most of us are not out in the forest breaking our legs in the
right.
wilderness. Most
right.
of us are having work stress, family stress.
Indeed.
Newspaper stress, yes. you know, television stress,
yeah.
political stress, all kinds of stressors mm-hmm. that our bodies are pumping out that cortisol consistently.
Sure.
And here's the problem with that. When you've got that unending flow of adrenal stimulation mm-hmm. and cortisol production, your immune system is being suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Short burst heightens the immune response. Long term suppresses the immune response.
Right.
And so your risk of cancer starts to rise.
Mm-hmm.
You stress, you can literally stress yourself into a cancer.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Your immune system shifts dramatically. You
yeah.
become less and less capable of fighting any infection mm-hmm. out there. So mm-hmm. bacteria, viruses, funguses,
yeah.
all start to have their way with you.
Yeah, right.
Because
right.
now your immune system has been suppressed from the chronic anxiety or stress.
Yeah.
You get neurons start to die. You mm-hmm. actually start killing your brain
mm-hmm.
from chronic stress and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
You are headed towards dementia mm. on the fast track
right.
if you can't de-stress and relax.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole lot of bad stuff. You're developing cardiovascular disease. You're developing
sure.
peripheral neuropathies.
Sleep impairment.
If you're like
yeah.
me, you're a stress eater.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you
weight
start,
gain. Sure, sure.
You start making yourself feel better with
right.
the calories and the comfort foods,
yeah.
which just makes you fatter,
yep.
which then increases inflammation to go right along with the poor immune response. It's a cascade.
Yes.
And so then the question is, fine, how do we get rid of stress and anxiety?
Right, chronic stress, yeah. So in, yeah, like in the short burst, as you're saying, it is basically to prepare you for fight or flight.
Yes.
But then the cortisol level should go back down to normal and stay low, mm-hmm. And then be ready to give you another spike when you need it. But if it is chronically high or low high level because you, your boss said something or you're late in the morning, or you have to pick up the kids, lunches aren't ready, or you have to make it to the doctor's appointment. These things, oh, traffic is terrible. And these things do stress us out.
They do.
But that raises the cortisol level as well, and that's when we run into chronic problems.
Right. See, we were not designed
yeah.
for city living.
Mm-hmm.
We were not. We, you know, we evolved basically as hunter-gatherers.
Yeah.
Out on the plains as we came down out of the African forests. And, you know, your biggest worries in those days were basically eating mm-hmm. and not getting eaten.
Yes. That's right.
And that's what our stress systems were designed for.
Yeah.
How do I find food?
Yeah.
How do I keep from being food?
Yeah.
It works well for how do I keep from being food. That's that short-term flight or fight mechanism. How do I find food? Okay, that's a lower level stress, but it evolved us to basically develop tools and
yeah.
learn to be, you know, the most accomplished predators on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I kind of smile sometimes when I see people using the word predator as a pejorative. No, predators are good. That's why we're that's why we're the apex predator on planet Earth, guys. You know, but you can overdo a good thing, I guess. But the common things that I see recommended for stress and anxiety
mm-hmm.
worry me.
Mm.
Do I really want to go on benzodiazepines and anti-anxiety agents and antidepressants and so on to cope with stress and anxiety. The such stressors as I get are not a Prozac or a Valium deficiency.
So
I'm not going to treat them with those things. I see people talking about, well, then you need to meditate. Sit down, gaze at your own navel and get yourself in contact with the cosmic om, which bores the hell out of me. I fall asleep.
Well, so. it's a learned art. And clearly you and I
tell
have
me,
not.
Tell me, Hindu housewife, yes.
Clearly you and I have not mastered it. But for those who do, they find a lot of benefit and calm in it.
So I am told, yes.
That's right.
I have talked to people who meditate on a regular basis. We had a doctor for many years before he retired who was an interesting fellow. He was a nice Jewish boy who used to go to Catholic monasteries for a week of silence.
Okay.
And he would sit in a stone cell and not talk for a week.
And
devote himself to prayer and contemplation. And he'd come back to work and,
be happy
and
calm.
De-stressed.
De-stressed and do well.
And I said, okay, I can't do that either.
I know. And I do know many places that offer that and people that go there and actually learn a lot. It's introspection. See, Jerry, we are surrounded by stimulation 24/7.
Yep.
And sometimes how we handle it is not appropriate. Like you said, you give stress, not take it. But some people can brush it off that easily. They imbibe it and it affects their life. And so for those people, it is important that they learn how to get away from the constant stimulation and then find a space. And then if this works for them, hey, I'm all for it. If it works for them, that's fine.
For me, it came down to a saying that I heard many years ago when I did a rotation in a drug rehab unit.
Okay.
As an intern or first year resident or whatever. And the phrase was, not my circus, not my monkey.
Yes.
I've
heard that, yes.
Yes, I've said that many times.
Been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And I guess that's pretty much my attitude.
Yeah.
You know, your stresses are your stresses.
Yep.
Mine are mine. And guess what? I'm too busy to mess with mine.
Yeah. So, to mess with mine.
I am. I am too busy trying to be productive.
Yeah.
I have things I want to accomplish in life.
Right.
And what I have found through my 77 years, now I'm on my 78th trip around the sun. I enjoy travel, 78 year trips around the sun. is I have to accomplish a little bit every day.
Yes.
I don't have to do a lot because my goals are pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do a little bit every day,
and
each day you finish with just a little bit more towards your goal.
Right.
At the end of the month, you've accomplished a fair bit. And at the end of the year, you'll be shocked at how much you have done.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So I am a goal-oriented person.
Right,
I want to rewrite so many blogs a day. I want to read so many medical articles a day. I want to then take a little time to contemplate what I've read.
Yes.
And I guess that's my substitute for introspection and oneness with the universe.
Sure.
Is looking at the paper, stopping to think about it for half an hour, saying, do I agree with what this author wrote? Do I think his conclusions make any sense to me?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's, no, he's full of poo-poo. Just because he got it published in his medical journal doesn't mean it makes any sense.
Sure. So, I mean, we've said this before, that you can read a medical journal and three different people will have three completely different opinions about that article.
That's right. So, my question is, what do I say to my patients, to our patients, about stress management when I'm not very good at it myself? I pretty much ignore it and do what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reality is I lead a joyous life. I am probably one of the happiest human beings I know. So I must be coping with the stress in some sort of reasonably productive way.
Yes.
That, as we all know by now, that is what led me into medicine. I started life as a young combat soldier, and the extreme violence of those years you know, made me decide to become a physician mm-hmm. and spend the rest of my life helping mm-hmm. instead of killing people.
Right.
So I guess I've taken that avoidance technique for the last 70-some years. I just try to stay out of stressful situations and do what I want to do and do what gives me joy.
Yeah, and that's a good message for people. You know, yes. Focus on yourself and focus on what brings you joy.
There you go.
Oh, well, we got to take a break.
Yes,
hear music.
We hear the music. And Dr. Mixon, I think you do cope with your stress because you exercise, you take walks. Those are important things. And now those have become part of your lifestyle. So that could be, you know, and it makes you happy. You're getting those endorphins going. So I don't know, just an observation. It's like, okay, yeah, you do have good stress management because you've been good to yourself, which makes you joyous. So,
All right.
We have some phone callers and we will be talking with them in just a moment, Amy and Lori. And we would love to talk with you too. 1-800-465-8770 is that number to call. And we will be back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment.
I feel good. I knew that I would not. So good, so good. I got you. Oh, I feel nice.
We all feel good, don't we?
We do.
Yes, we do.
Right, now, on my computer during the break.
Yeah.
By the way, those of you out there that don't get to see our breaks very much, Samara was in true confessions mode.
Yes.
And she was telling us about when she was in India recently, just a couple of weeks ago. She eats fried sugar.
Fried sugar.
Fried sugar. That's kind of like
literally that's
deep
what it
fried
is.
Butter.
Oh, boy.
At the American fairs in India, you do deep fried sugar.
Yeah, so the dessert is called jalebi, and it's literally just a batter, and they put it in a certain round circle, and then they just deep fry it and take it out. Oh, it is to die for.
Die is the right word.
It is the right word. Well, part of my heart died.
Yeah, just do it once or twice while you're in the culture, and then it's like, okay, until next time.
That's right. So I was telling you that when my wife and daughter were in China this summer, my wife took our daughter to China because there was a fencing coach there that we wanted her to work with. Mm-hmm. So she got one and two fencing lessons a day, every day of the week for 6 weeks.
That's intense.
It was intense, yes. She was so sore at first, but she had barely moved. But, you know, it's really turned her fencing around. She was very good at defense, but I couldn't get the kid to attack. Mm. And I was explaining to her, a good defense mm-hmm. means you lose slower because you give them the chance to attack you. Mm. And all you do is prevent them from hitting you. And then you have to try to counter attack. But you're always giving them the first shot at you. And so, yeah, a good defense is important, but it's aggression. It's the offense that you win in life. And that applies to everything. You know, we had a saying back when I was a young combat soldier, the best defense is a dead enemy. Once they're dead, they don't hurt you. Yeah. That's pretty simple.
Yeah.
So that was our best defense. Kill them.
It doesn't work in school sports, though. Yes.
School sports is bad. Yeah. But fencing is ritual combat. Mm. It is the old duel to the death. Mm. Except that instead of dying, someone gets 5 touches in the first rounds and up to 15 touches, you know, in the eliminations. But it is one-on-one, you against your opponent. Mm. And defending is not the best way to do it. You have to have a good defense, but the way you win is to attack and attack and attack and attack so quickly. Speed, aggression, accuracy are the things I'm trying to pound into her. By the way, I used to fence in college.
So, okay.
Anyway, when they were in China, what brought this up was your sugar, your fried sugar. They have a treat there in which they liquefy, caramelize sugar and pour it into molds. And they make chickens and pigs and dragons and stuff on a stick. Mm. And so you get to walk around eating this fancy dragon on a stick. And so I've got a photograph of my daughter holding her chicken in one hand and the dragon in the other. And I will talk to Kelly before she puts this stuff up online, see if she can use this photograph to show you.
Nice.
Ivory's chicken and dragon. And during the next break, I'll slide my computer around.
Oh, good. That's right. I don't have to wait that long. Yeah.
Yes.
So that long roundabout way, we've been delaying this poor lady who's on the phone waiting for us. So let's go to the phone call and do something useful today.
I want a sugar dragon right now. I don't know why. All right. We're going to head to Puyallup and start the day with Amy. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine, Amy.
Hello, Amy.
Boy, I got up early to get you guys today.
Oh, yes.
I have called before, but didn't get the correct information. I have Klebsiella, oxytocin, and have had Klebsiella pneumonia. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I really am getting told too many stories about what it is. Can I get rid of it? Is it a super bug? I'm at a loss.
Okay.
I am on infusions at the Cancer Care Alliance of Rosethin. Two grams per infusion for the last 6 months.
Wow. Okay. Generally, Klebsiella is not considered, quote, a super bug, but it is a bug that can develop multiple resistances. It can be resistant to a wide variety of antibiotics, and it develops new resistance fairly efficiently. So, you know, if you've got a multi-drug resistant Klebsiella, yeah, it can be really tough to get rid of. The other thing that occurs to me, though, about your commentary, you said you're at the Cancer Care Alliance.
Yeah.
So have you been treated for cancer with chemotherapy, radiation, that sort of thing?
No. No, it was the only place in Pierce County that you can have an port or you can have a IV for medication that you cannot take orally.
All right.
So the question is, why did she get Klebsiella in the first place?
Yes. Well, and it is most commonly a disease of older people. You know, as we age, we start losing a lot of our immune competence. That is why cancer and infections are the two most common killers. I started to say most, well, I'm not sure that's it. Cardiovascular disease, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And cancer and infections are the other two, I guess, the big three. But the cancer and infections are a problem because our immune system is damping down. We're not as good at recognizing foreign invaders in our system and attacking and killing them. Again, the best defense, a good offense, you want the bugs dead. Klebsiella is more and more common in the United States in recent years, and I'm not quite sure why. We've just had a whole lot of vegetables and salads and now onions at McDonald's being
recalled because of E. coli. Actually, one person died.
Yeah. Well, and we're getting Listeria and Klebsiella.
Yeah.
Which is just surprises me.
Yeah.
Because we didn't used to see a whole lot of that. But Klebsiella pneumonia is a common killer in older people. You apparently have one that is really tough.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my question is, what are the components that are making it difficult for you to clear? Because a couple of grams of Rosethin that frequently is...
Yes, it's a lot of antibiotics.
It is a lot of antibiotics.
Yeah, yeah. And then when you become that resistant, you kind of have more problems because you, C. difficile is difficult to treat and you become more susceptible to it. So,
yes.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Do you suffer from a pulmonary fibrosis or old lung disease of some sort? Were you a smoker?
I have COPD and have had many years ago a lung that collapsed in 85 and had to have a surgery to scarify the lung.
Okay.
Survived that, sweetheart. And have baseline of being told and confirmed of lupus when probably about 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Never have had this kind of problem until I had pneumonia and went to the hospital several years in a row around the time of January, February, you know, the wonderful months we have for Christmas and so on, and ended up with pneumonia and came out of the hospital with this.
Okay. And your COPD, was that from smoking?
No. Well, I had smoked in the past, but, you know, as it got older, then the asthma got worse.
Mm-hmm. So you had asthma in addition to being a smoker.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that explains your COPD. You've had a collapsed lung. You've had a scarified down. So now we've got scar tissue, fibrous tissue that have a poor blood supply to them.
Mm-hmm.
So if the bugs are growing down in that area of your lung, it's hard for the antibiotics to get there because the antibiotic is carried through your bloodstream and you've got an area with poor blood supply.
Right.
You just don't get enough of it in to kill the bugs.
Right. All right, so her immune system is compromised.
And she's an elderly lady. Yeah. Yes. So we put her all together.
Yeah.
That's why you're having troubles. All right.
So the residing of the Klebsiella is in the lung?
Well, if it's a Klebsiella pneumonia, that would be it.
Yeah, but usually it can be the gut, too.
Yes.
Okay, and so now it
grows anywhere.
Anywhere, yeah.
Oh, it grows anywhere.
Sure.
And that's why I now have oxytocol.
I don't know what that is.
No, I don't know either. All right.
Oxytoca. The head nurse at the infusion center, they're wonderful, wonderful women and men. We're talking, and she says, I'm going to give you a printout of what we have for the different types of Klebsiella that you have had.
Uh-huh.
Well, I didn't like anything I saw because soon I am out of antibiotics and there more.
And that's the issue because...
And now I'm at the end of the road.
Yeah, when you get a infection like you've got and it's in down in that areas of your lung that don't have good blood supply, you get a little bit of antibiotic to the bugs.
Yeah.
And so you kill the ones that are sensitive to the antibiotic. The toughest ones survive and reproduce.
Yeah.
And each time you get a sub-lethal dose of the antibiotic, you select out more resistant bugs.
That's right.
And that's how you get multi-drug resistance to these things.
So Klebsiella oxytoca can cause pneumonia, urinary tract infection, soft tissue infection, septicemia, and can cause septic shock.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you've got the infectious disease people, young lady, and it's clearly nothing that we're going to be able to handle here on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, I feel sorry for your issue, but all you can do is hope that they can get enough high-dose antibiotics in there to kill these bugs.
Mm.
And this is the treatments first started out this spring early, around March, at 7 days every time.
Yeah.
And seeing I can't take the pills because of the rejection of the stomach just kills me.
Right.
And then it jumped up to 10 days.
Mm.
And I've been battling this since April of this year.
Wow.
I am living at the infusion center every day.
Yes, I understand. Mm. Well, so you've got the best it sounds like you got good care. The question is, will it be adequate? And I don't know.
Yeah.
But the music is in the background, so we have to go.
Yeah.
We got to take a break, Amy. If you'd like, if you have another question for the doctors, we can wait. keep you on the line. Stay right there on the line. We will take our quick break here for Leading Edge Medicine. Then we'll be back. We're going to talk about this more. And then, Lori, we're going to talk to you as well. Here is that number to get through and get in our call queue. It is 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely.
And welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. We are here with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat today. My name is Lynette. If you've got a question for the doctors, time to get into the call queue right now. Don't wait till the very end. 1-800-465-8770. And we have Amy on the line.
Hello, Amy.
Hi.
Did you have another question for the doctors, Amy?
Where do I go from here? Or is there even a place like University of Washington or stay with the infectious specialist doctor? Is this rather what I'm hearing from you? There's nothing you can do.
Well, certainly nothing I can do. I mean, this is way outside of my, you know, my current field. I mean, microbiology was my first degree, but that was a long time ago. You know, you are with an infectious disease specialist right now. And
yes,
whether you need a team, two or three infectious disease people to bounce ideas off each other and see if they can come up with something new and innovative, that would be where I would want to go next. Because it sounds like with the person you're working with, you're not apparently making a lot of progress. Otherwise, you wouldn't be calling us about this. And so, I'd say, you know, you probably need a second, third, fourth set of eyes on this and get several infectious disease people together to say, okay, here's our task. How do we help this lady? And nobody, no matter how good they are, has all the answers. And a fresh set of eyes, fresh perspective may well come up with something that would certainly escape me. I mean,
this does not reside, first of all, in the bladder. It resides
It, this is a bug that can grow anywhere and everywhere. It grows in wounds. It grows in your bladder. It grows in your gut. It grows on your skin. It grows in your lungs.
Yeah.
It can grow systemically in your bloodstream and cause septicemia. So, no, this is this is a nasty bug that will attack any and every niche it can in your system. And
that's exactly what it's doing.
Yes. And so you need to get some really, really first-rate advice and get a team of people trying to come up with a good idea.
I don't know where to go from this point I'm with now.
Well, the UW is a good starting point. You know, it's an academic center. They teach microbiologists and infectious disease people. So if you can get into their system and get them trying to take you on as a project, this is not simple. This is something that the PhDs would love to work with.
How do I get to there?
Well, you call the University of Washington Medical Center, and you ask for the infectious disease department, and you outline your problem, and you ask if you could please have an appointment to be evaluated.
Do I have to have a referral from another
doctor?
That's
more of an insurance issue. Okay.
Okay.
Depends.
Okay.
If you're willing to pay the bills, you don't need referrals. If you want the insurance company to pay the bills, then they may require you to get a referral. But there's two different things.
Yeah.
One is the medicine, the other is the money.
Yeah. And with I'm reasonably sure she'll need a referral.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's only a few infectious specialists in Pierce County.
Yes.
And I have asked, why can't I find out the source of where this is coming from? I got blank not an answer.
Well,
I didn't even get an answer as to what I had until 2 months after I was taking the medicine.
I don't know why.
Right around the outside.
My philosophy is to let people know as much as I know about their problem, because it's their life, their body. They have every right to know about it. And so, you know, my doctors actually give you a copy of your chart notes. So everything that we say, everything we think, everything we're considering, you have a copy of. I can't run other people's practice. I can only tell you what we do.
Okay, sure, I guess I can try that avenue.
All right, ma'am.
Oh, thank you for the call, Amy.
Take care, Amy.
Oh,
bye-bye.
I
wish you the best.
Thank you for clarifying a few things for me.
You're welcome.
All right. We are taking your phone calls, and the phone lines are open. 1-800-465-8770. We are live in the studio, headed to Seattle. And Lori on the line. Good morning, Lori. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Hi, doctors.
Hello.
I have a question for Dr. Mixon. My daughter is 33 years old. She had surgery on July 17th for endometriosis. And she had one small nodule on the left and one on the right and a tiny one on the bladder and one on the uterus that they removed.
Okay.
Went through surgery 3 months ago, perfectly fine, no problem.
Good.
Her OBGYN wanted to give her a progesterone pill that was synthetic. She read about all the side effects. She didn't want to take that. So she found a functional medicine doctor who does kind of works with endometriosis. She gave her a progesterone pill of 100 milligrams orally every night and 200 vaginally. She did her hormone testing, but she said she didn't need any of the other ones. She just needed the progesterone. Well, then in September, she had a menstrual cycle, which was normal. It lasted 4 days. No pain, nothing. It was fine. Then October 11th, this month, she had a menstrual cycle for 2 days, and then another one 2 weeks later for 3 days. No cramps, nothing. And then here we are today. She wants to know if she comes to your clinic and sees one of your doctors, if she could get her all of her hormones and all of her blood work to have one of your doctors look at it and see what she should do next.
Okay. You know,
Is that something that she could do?
Something she could do.
Because this doctor does not get back to her. She emailed her, and it's been a week since she's heard her, and she told her, oh, just stop the vaginal one for a while. And I've never heard of doing this vaginal. She doesn't swallow pills, so she has to break it open when she swallows the one at nighttime, and she puts it in applesauce. And is she getting too much progesterone?
Well, that's always a question.
Yeah, we don't know without seeing labs. And then remember cyclical changes of hormones is always taking place.
And that's part of what I wanted to tell this lady. We drawing a single hormone panel on your daughter is not going to give us the answers we need. Let's back up and talk about endometriosis a little bit, because most of our listening audience has no idea what we're talking about. So normally what happens is the lining of the uterus, the area we call the endometrium, each cycle, each month, your estrogen levels rise and then your progesterone levels rise. And that combination of estrogen and progesterone causes the endometrium, the lining, to grow thick and luxuriant. And it's there to provide a rich blood supply so that if she gets pregnant, that new baby will come down the tube after it's been fertilized and implant in the wall of the uterus. And that's where the placenta will spread out from and provide nutrition for the baby. If you don't get pregnant at the end of the month, because you're mid-cycle right in the middle is when you're supposed to ovulate. Mm-hmm. If you haven't gotten pregnant within a week after that or so, progesterone levels fall rapidly. Right. The endometrium sloughs off, mm-hmm. and that's what your menstrual period is. And it just drains out the cervix, down through the vagina, and now you've got your menstrual bleed.
And that's a 28-day cycle, which
that's
is
right. usually.
Yes.
And so with endometriosis, what will happen is instead of all that menstrual blood going out the vagina, some of it will reflux back out the tubes. And some of that blood will have endometrial tissue that is still alive. And so it goes out the tube into the free abdominal space, and that bleeding really hurts.
Yeah.
Blood is great inside of blood vessels, but when you get it out into the tissues, it is a terrible irritant, causes a lot of pain, and then some of that endometrial tissue will actually implant and start to grow. It can grow on the bladder, can grow on the bowel, can grow on the pelvic sidewalls, can grow anywhere. And so from that point on, every month when the endometrium within the uterus is growing and then sloughing, the endometrium that's now out inside her belly is growing and sloughing, and she's actually bleeding into her pelvis, which is why she's having all that pain. So they've gone in, they've looked around, they found all the sites they could find. And the reason I put that modifier, they could find, is because sometimes there'll be little pieces that are hidden and you miss them. But they find and destroy all that they can. Then they put her on a progestogen. Now, the one they picked was a synthetic progestogen you didn't want her to have, and that's fine. But the real progesterone, a micronized progesterone, will be absorbed from the stomach okay. And so that was that 100 milligrams a day that they wanted her to take of the oral progesterone. It's the actual hormone that human ovaries produced. The vaginal progesterone is a secondary way of absorbing it. You can put vaginal suppositories in, and you will absorb it through that mucous membrane in the vagina quite nicely and get good levels of progesterone in your blood. The idea of having high, high levels of progesterone all the time is to interrupt that cycle so that, you shouldn't be having a menstrual cycle if your levels are staying high enough, and that endometrium should simply atrophy. It should shrivel up, get very, very thin, and not cause problems. That's the theory behind what's going on. The fact that she's having some periods says that her progesterone levels are not quite high enough to completely suppress that menstruation. So she probably is going to need a little higher dose on a daily basis, but that's my guesstimate without seeing her labs. The problem is that women's cycles change from day to day, week to week, throughout her cycle. So her estrogens will go up and down. Her testosterone will go up and down. Her progesterone will go up and down. And so no one test is going to tell us where she is. What you would have to do is to test her two or three times a week throughout the cycle until we actually see where she is consistently.
And that cycle may change the next month.
That's true. But at least that gives us something to work with.
Right.
You know, then you can start making guesstimates about what changes you want to make. And they will be guesstimates. There are no firm, hard endpoints we can look at here, except is she bleeding or not? I'm getting signals
she just
from...
to know, because they don't... They don't do her...
Ma'am, hold on 1 second. We'll come back to this.
Yes, Lori, hang on the line.
But okay. Lynette is sending me signals. She's saying break, break, break. So.
Yes, and we don't want to finish abruptly here. So, Lori, stay on the line. Doctors will continue in just a moment as Leading Edge Medicine continues. And our phone lines are open for you at 1-800-465-8770. Talking about your health as we're aging. Questions about a diagnosis, perhaps some symptoms, give us a call right now, 800-465-8770. Leading Edge Medicine continues in just a moment. Stay right there. Here we go. Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette here with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. And we are live in the studio on this Saturday taking your calls. Here is that number to get through today and get into the call queue, 1-800-465-8770. We are talking with Lori.
All right. So, Lori, I am by nature a pleaser. I like it when I can make people happy. The question here is, do I make you happy or do I make my doctors happy? Because I just got an email yesterday from one of my doctors whimpering and moaning about having to do things that are outside of our usual scope of care. Oh, so I can tell you right now, oopsie, that doctor isn't going to want to do this. You know, we are a longevity, more, you know, anti-aging, if you will. Although I don't like that phrase, anti-aging, because I admit up front, I can't make you an hour younger. Mm. I can help you be stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and happier, but I can't make you younger. You've lived how many hours you've lived. If I could make someone younger, it would be me. But then again, I got myself in all kinds of trouble when I was young, so why do I want to go back there?
Oops.
On the other hand, we have occasionally taken on a special project if I can get one of the doctors to volunteer for it. So about all I could tell you at this point is, you know, I can pass this by the physicians and see if somebody raises their hand and says, me, I want to do it. And, in which case I will gladly pass it off to that physician.
This is going to be a difficult task to you. Yeah. I would just like her to have a full, blood work done on her anyway, because nobody has really ever done that. And the nutritional medicine that she was going to, the naturopathic, was doing her hormones every 3 years. And I said, no, you should do that every 3 months or at least every 6 months. I said, that's not right. He goes, oh, no, we don't need to do that. So I would like her to come to you and see one of your doctors and just do a complete blood panel just to see where she's at anyway of all of her hormones, because nobody's ever really done that correctly.
All right. Well,
can I do that?
You want to set it up, Samira?
Yeah, I mean, of course you can do that. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
No, you can do that as long as you understand that this is a little bit outside of what we do. We're happy to do a health analysis and to do a lab and to look at her and chat with her. And that'll give her two office visits. We're happy to do that. And then if you feel that this is a good fit and that you'd like to come along with us, we'd be happy to tackle it and see what we can do to help.
Yeah.
We do labs every 3 months, as you mentioned. And also when they're in-house labs for longevity patients, we actually don't restrict them. So if for some reason we do need to do labs more frequently, we will do them. And if it helps in her care, we will certainly provide that service. And these are longevity labs looking at estrogen, progesterone, testosterone levels, and an FSH is our in-house lab. So there's no limit to how much we can do in a year for one of our patients. So if, you know, you want to go down that road, our doctors can definitely take on that challenge. It's just that her age group and her particular diagnosis puts her a little bit outside our scope of practice.
Although,
right,
The docs have heard me say many times, I wish people would come to us in their 30s.
When they're younger.
Because the odds are we can reduce her risk of breast cancer by about 90%.
And lots of other things. And we don't know anything else about her medical history. All we know is that she's 33 and she has endometriosis.
Yep.
But there might be other things that we can pick up and that we can help. Now, you know, I was reflecting with somebody the other day that even though I've been here 14 years, Jerry, and when I first came, and the clinics have been open a lot longer, but when I first came, we were scared of saying we can cure your diabetes or we can reduce your risk for this, that, or the other. But in the last 14 years, that science has evolved.
It has
and
indeed.
We do know that we can cure diabetes. People are actively saying that you can reduce the risk for chronic diseases. So if chronic disease is because it's time, and then you recognize the numbers early and you are proactive in changing those numbers at an earlier age, then you can definitely change the future.
And I'd like to point out that this young lady is 3 years older than my wife was when we started treating her. Okay. And, you know, if I will do it for my wife, why wouldn't I do it for other people's wives, girlfriends, daughters? You know, because, well, I want my wife to have the best care possible. I want her to, as she's getting older, and she's now pushing 50.
Yeah.
But people look at her and they think she's still in her early 30s.
Yeah, no, I get that. And then, you know, sometimes in that young age, people kind of strap for money, so it's not that easy.
Yep.
But we definitely do find that sometimes with a hard patient and a difficult problem in the first year, if we can help them, then they stay with us for the long term. And over time, we require less and less hands-on.
Yep.
So in the beginning, your daughter may require more hands-on, and we don't have any restriction on the number of visits per year. And as she gets older with us, she may actually go back to what our regular patients are doing, which is 4 visits a year.
Yep.
Okay. So do you think then you said that she does not get enough progesterone? Should she just keep doing what
we're guessing
for now?
That's a guess.
Yeah, that's a guess.
Again, I can't make a firm diagnosis. I haven't seen the patient. I don't have any lab data.
Right.
You know, so I'm going by what I would guesstimate might be happening.
Right.
There's a difference in that and a firm diagnosis.
Okay. Right. So, you know, the average dose of progesterone varies a lot from woman to woman. It depends upon her age group and what we're trying to achieve for her. And then sometimes we change the dose in the cycle as well. We give her more at a certain time of the cycle and less at another time in the cycle. So we would have to really work with her, and she would have to work with us. And you already mentioned one problem, which is she doesn't swallow pills.
Yeah.
And so that might be a big issue.
Yeah.
Well, and the other problem is that progesterone in high doses really gives people the munchies.
Yeah,
and it
does.
It is not unusual to see women on high-dose progesterone gain 30, 40 pounds.
And also, you know, hormonal imbalance. If she's in progesterone dominance with not enough estrogen, she'll be in trouble. If she has endometriosis, keeping her in estrogen dominance is a problem.
Yes.
So balancing her hormones is not going to be easy.
Yeah. Well, she'll be going to the clinic in Linwood. Is there anybody in particular that you would suggest? Or
Dr. Cho.
Yeah, Dr. Cho is our most experienced physician up there.
Okay. How do you spell his last name?
It's a her and a C-H-O.
Yep.
C-H-O. Okay.
Yeah. I always enjoy
Perfect.
Dr. Cho's accent because she is Korean, but was raised with medical missionary parents in Uganda. So she has a Korean Ugandan English accent.
Interesting. But just a little bit background about Dr. Cho. She's our longest serving physician with Dr. Mixon, and she in fact opened the Linwood Clinic with him. A staunch believer of longevity, and I respect her tremendously.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
All right. We are open for your phone calls talking about your health and what is going on with it. Maybe you have a recent diagnosis. Maybe you're dealing with something with a family member, some symptoms. Maybe you're just noticing, wait a minute, I'm aging. What's going on here? Can I help to feel better? Well, that's what we're here for, Longevity Medical Clinics. And we have three for you, like we mentioned, one in Linwood, also one in Kirkland and in Tacoma. And you can do what Lori is going to have her daughter do, set up a health analysis appointment. We'll do a blood test and find out what's going on and perhaps how we can help. That number to call to make that appointment is 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866 86 Young. You can also go to our website and find out more about us there at lmclinic.com. You can also find a day and time that works for your schedule. We want to meet you. We want to help you on your health journey as you are aging, because we're all aging, right? But we want to do it the best that we can. Find out more on our website. Again, that's lmclinic.com. We're going to take a quick break here. Leading Edge Medicine continues with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Here is that number with your questions. The phone lines are open. 1-800-465-8770. Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back. Stay right there.